looking in that direction. It's crawling to Park Pobjedy. So we follow it. Several hundred meters further on, they found three cartridge cases in the middle of the path. They both started walking more briskly.
Good lad, Anton said with pride. Wouldn't you just know he would think of leaving a trail?
Artyom nodded. He was becoming ever more certain that while the unknown creature had been able to get to him without a sound, the boy was still alive. But would Oleg have agreed to go with his mysterious kidnapper willingly? Then why would he have marked his trail? Artyom grew quiet for several minutes, and so did Anton. The pungent darkness dissipated the recent joy and hope, and he once more became just a little frightened. In hoping to make amends to the father, he had forgotten all the warnings and terrible tales retold in whispers. He had forgotten the stalker's order not to leave Kievskaya. Anton was tearing ahead to find his son, but why was Artyom going to the ominous Park Pobjedy? Why was he neglecting himself and his primary mission? For a second he recalled the strange people from Polyanka and the discussion about fate, and he felt relieved. But the relief only lasted about 10 minutes, just up to the next symbol portraying a snake. This figure was twice as large as the earlier one, and it looked as if it was supposed to convince travelers that they were going in the right direction. However, Artyom was not entirely happy about it. The tunnel seemed endless. They walked and walked forever, and more than 2 hours already had passed by Artyom's calculations. The third painted giant snake was more than 10 meters long, and they heard something there. Anton froze, turning his ear towards the tunnel, and Artyom listened too. Strange sounds were coming from the depths of the crossings in fits and starts. At first he couldn't make them out, but later he understood. A chant, similar to the one the pipes had played to the music box at Kievskaya, was being accompanied by the pounding of drums.
Not far now, Anton nodded.
Time, which had already been slipping by slowly, nearly stood still. Looking at his partner, Artyom realized with startling clarity that he was nodding too dramatically, as if his head were twitching in convulsions. When Anton began to glide down onto his side, looking comically like a toy animal stuffed with rags, Artyom thought that he might catch him because there was plenty of time for it. Then a light prick in his shoulder stopped him from doing so, taking a puzzled look at where it smarted. Artyom discovered a feathered steel needle stuck in his jacket. Nothing came of his intention to pull it out. His whole body was petrified, and then suddenly, it was as if it had disappeared. His feeble legs gave way to the forces of gravity, and Artyom ended up on the ground. At the same time, he remained almost totally conscious, but it became increasingly difficult to breathe. He was unable to move his extremities. He heard footsteps near him, swift and weightless. The approaching being could not be human. Artyom had learned to recognize human footsteps long ago on the patrols at Bedienka. And then a sudden, unpleasant smell reached his nose.
1, 2. Strangers. Laid out.
Someone overhead said.
I'm a good shot. It was far away. The neck. Shoulder.
Another responded. The voices were strange, devoid of any intonation. Flat. They reminded one mostly of the monotone drone of the wind in the tunnels. However, they were definitely human voices.
To eat well aimed. That's what the great worm wants.
The first voice had continued.
To eat. One. You, two, me. We carry the strangers home.
The second added. The picture before him gave Artyom a start. They tore him from the ground jarringly. For a fraction of a moment, a face flashed in front of his eyes, narrow, with dark, deep-set eyes. Then they put out the flashlights, and it became pitch black. And only with the flood of blood to his head did Artyom understand that they were dragging him somewhere roughly like a sack. The strange conversation continued for a time, although the phrases were intermixed now with an intense groaning.
A paralyzing needle, not poison, why? That's what the commander ordered. That's what the priest ordered. The great worm wanted it that way. It's okay to save the meat. You're smart. You and the priest are friends. The priest is teaching you to eat. One, two. The enemies are coming. There's a smell of gunpowder in the air. Fire. A bad enemy. How do they get here? I don't know. The commander and Vartan are doing the interrogation. You and I are the hunters. It is good that the great worm is happy. You and I will get a reward. A lot to eat. Boots. A jacket. A lot to eat. No jacket. No boots. I'm young. I hunt the enemies. It is good. There's a lot. A reward. I'm happy. The day is okay. Vartan brings a new young one. You, I, we hunt the enemies. The great worm is happy. The people sing, a holiday. A holiday. I'm happy. Dances, vodka. I dance with Natasha. Natasha and the commander, they dance, not you. I am young, strong. The commander is very old. Natasha is young. I hunt enemies. Brave, it is good. Natasha and I, we dance.
Not too far away, new voices could be heard, and an argument had broken out. Artyom guessed that they'd brought them to the station. Here it was almost as dark as in the tunnels. Only one small campfire was burning in the whole place. They threw them nonchalantly onto the floor next to it. Someone's steel fingers gripped him by the beard and turned him face up. Several people of an unimaginably strange appearance were standing around. They were almost stark naked and their heads were shaved bare, but it seemed they were not at all cold. On the forehead of each could be seen a wavy line similar to the pictures at the crossing. Their small stature caused them to appear unhealthy, sunken cheeks, pale skin, but they radiated some kind of superhuman strength. Artyom recalled with what difficulty Melnik had borne the wounded 10 from the library, and he compared this with how quickly these strange creations had brought them to the station. A long arrow was in nearly each one's hand. Artyom recognized with surprise that they were made from the plastic sheathings that are used for spacing and insulating bundles of electrical wires. Huge steel bayonets hung on their belts, as from old Kalashnikov machine guns. All these strange people were approximately of the same age. There was no one here older than 30. They scrutinized them in silence for some time. Then the only one of the men wearing a beard and with a red line on his forehead said, "Okay, I'm happy. These are the enemies of the Great Worm, the people of the machines, evil people, tender meat. The Great Worm is satisfied. Shara, Vovan are brave. I will take the people of the machines to the prison and interrogate them. Holiday tomorrow. All good people will eat the enemies. Vovan, which needle? The paralyzer?"
"Yes, the paralyzer,"
a thick-set man with a blue line on his forehead said.
"Paralyzer is good. The meat won't be spoiled,"
the bearded one said.
"Vovan, Sharap, get the enemies and come with me to the prison."
The light began to recede. New voices were calling nearby. Someone inarticulately expressed his delight, someone wailed mournfully. Then singing could be heard, low, barely audible and not good. It seemed as if the dead really were singing, and Artyom recalled the tales that made their way around Park Pobyedy. Then they put him on the ground again, flung Anton alongside, and before long, he lost consciousness. It was as if someone had shoved him, suggested that he had to get up right away. Stretching, he lit a lantern, covering it with his hand so as not to hurt the sensitive half-asleep eyes, and inspected the tent. Where was the machine gun? And he went to the station. He was so homesick, but now, when he again had turned up at Vedienka, he was not at all happy about it. The smoky ceiling, emptied tents filled with bullet holes and the heavy ash in the air. Here it seemed something awful had happened, and the station was strikingly different from how he remembered it. In the distance, most likely from the passage at the other end of the platform, wild howls were heard, as if they were slicing up someone there. Two emergency lamps sparsely lit the station, their weak beams penetrating the lazy tufts of smoke with difficulty. There was no one on the whole platform except for a small girl playing on the floor next to one of the neighboring tents. Artyom was on the verge of asking her what had happened here and where the rest had disappeared to, but catching sight of him, the girl began to cry loudly, and he thought better of it. The tunnels. The tunnels from Vedienka to the botanical garden. If the inhabitants of his station had gone anywhere, then it would be there. If they had run to the center, to Hansa, they wouldn't have left him and the child alone. Jumping onto the track, Artyom moved toward the dark void of the entrance. It's dangerous without weapons, he thought, but there was nothing to lose, and he had to reconnoiter the situation. Had the Dark Ones suddenly been able to penetrate the defenses? Then any hope lay with him. He had to find out the truth and report it to the Southern Allies. The darkness enveloped him just beyond the entrance, and fear came with the darkness. He could see absolutely nothing visible ahead, but he could hear disgusting chomping sounds. He regretted once more his lack of a machine gun, but it was too late to retreat. Steps began to sound in the distance, and then came ever closer. It was as if they approached when Artyom was moving forward and stopped when he stopped. Something similar had happened to him, but when and how, he couldn't recall. It was very frightening, approaching the unseen and unknown. An adversary? His trembling knees did not allow him to move quickly, and time was on the side of the terror. A cold sweat ran down his temples. He felt more ill at ease with every passing second. Finally, when the steps were only about 3 meters from him, Artyom could not hold back, and stumbling, falling, and lifting himself up, he raced back to the station. Falling a third time, his weakened legs refused to sustain him, and he understood that death was imminent.
Everything on this earth is a consequence of the great worm. Once the whole world consisted of stone, and there was nothing on it except stone. There was no air, and there was no water. There was no light, and there was no fire. There was no man, and there was no beast. There was only dead stone. And then the great worm made it his home.
But how did the great worm get here? From where does he come? Who bore him?
The great worm has always been. Don't interrupt. He made a home for himself in the very center of the world and said, "This world will be mine. It is made from hard stone, but I will gnaw my own passages in it. It is cold, but I will warm it with the heat of my body. It is dark, but I will light it with the light of my eyes. It is dead, but I will inhabit it with my creations."
Who are the creations?
The creations are the creatures the great worm issued from his womb. Both you and I, all of us, are his creations. There you have it. And then the great worm said, "Everything will be as I said, because this world henceforward is mine." And he began to gnaw passages through the hard stone, and the stone softened in his belly. Saliva and juice moistened it, and the stone became alive, and began to bear the fungi. And the great worm, having gnawed the stone, let it pass through himself. And he did it thus for thousands of years until his passages went through all the earth.
A thousand? What, 1, 2, 3, how many? 1,000?
You have 10 fingers on your hands, and Sharap has 10 fingers. No, Sharap has 12. That won't do. Let's say Grom has 10 fingers. If you take you, Grom, and other people, so that altogether there were as many as you have fingers, then each of them all would have 10 times 10 each. This is 100, and 1,000. This is when it is 10 times each 100.
That's a lot of fingers. I can't count them.
It's not important. When the great worm's paths appeared on the earth,
His first work was finished. And then he said, "So I have gnawed thousands and thousands of paths through the hard stone, and the stone has been scattered into crumbs, and the grit has passed through my womb, and has become soaked with the juice of my life, and it has become a lie. And earlier the stone had occupied all the space in the world, but now an empty place has appeared. Now there is a place for the children I shall bear." And his first creations came forth from his womb, the names of whom they no longer remember. And they were big and strong, like the great worm himself. And the great worm loved them, but there was naught for them to drink, for in the world there was no water, and they died of thirst. And then the great worm grieved. Grief was unknown to him before then, for there had been no one to love him, and he had not known solitude. But having created new life, he had loved it. And it was difficult to part with it. And then the great worm began to cry, and his tears filled up the world. Thus water appeared, and he said, "See, now there is also a place so that one may live in it, and water so that one may drink it. And the earth, sated by the juice of my womb, is alive, and it bears fungi. Now I shall make some creatures. I shall bear my children. They will live in the paths that I have gnawed, and drink of my tears, and eat the fungi grown in the juice of my womb." And he feared giving birth once more to huge creations like himself, for you see there was not enough space, or water, or fungi. At first he created the fleas, and then the rats, then the cats, and then the chickens, and then the dogs, and then hogs, and then man. But it did not turn out as he had thought. The fleas began to drink blood, and the cats to eat rats, and the dogs to oppress cats, and man to kill them all and eat them. And when man for the first time killed and ate another man, the great worm understood that his children had become unworthy of him, and he cried. And each time that man eats man, the great worm cries, and his tears flow through the passages and flood them. Man is good. The meat is tasty, sweet. But one can eat only his enemies. I know.
Artyom clenched and unclenched the fingers on his hands. His hands were tied behind his back with a piece of wire, and they'd become numb, but at least they were responding again. Even the fact that his whole body ached was now a good sign. The paralysis from the poisoned needle had turned out to be temporary. The idiotic idea spun in his head that he, in contrast to the unknown storyteller, had no memory of how chickens had got into the metro. No doubt some merchants had succeeded in bringing them from some market somewhere. They had brought swine from one of the Vedienka pavilions, he knew, but chickens. He tried to see what was next to him. But around him was absolute inky darkness. However, someone was not too far away. It had already been half an hour since Artyom had come to. Gradually he was becoming aware of where he was.
"He's stirring. I can hear it,"
a hoarse voice said.
"I'll call the commander. The commander will do the interrogation."
Something had moved, then stopped. Artyom tried to stretch his legs. They too turned out to be bound with wire. He tried to roll over onto his other side and hit something soft. A long, drawn-out moan full of pain was heard.
"Anton, is that you?"
Artyom whispered. There was no answer.
"The great worm's enemies have come too,"
someone said derisively in the darkness.
"It would have been better had you not come too."
It was that same broken sage voice that had been relating the story about the great worm and the creation of life for the past half hour. It immediately became clear that his keeper differed from the other inhabitants of the station. Instead of primitive, chopped phrases, he'd been speaking properly, somewhat pompously, and even the timbre of his voice was completely human, unlike that of the others.
"Who are you? Release us!"
Artyom wheezed, moving his tongue with difficulty.
"Yes, yes, that's just what they all say. No, unfortunately, wherever you were headed, your travels are over. They are going to torture and grill you. And what will you do?"
The voice answered from the darkness with indifference.
"Are you also imprisoned?" Artyom asked.
"We all are in prison. They are releasing you this very day."
His unseen companion giggled. Anton groaned again and began to stir. He mumbled something unintelligible but had not yet regained consciousness.
"Why are we sitting together in the darkness, like cave dwellers?"
A lighter was struck, and the spot of flame lit the face of the speaker. He had a long grey beard, dirty matted hair, and dull, mocking eyes lost in a network of wrinkles. He could be no less than 60. He was sitting on a chair along the other side of the iron bars that broke the room in two. There was something like it at Vedienha, too. It had a strange name, the Monkey House. Artyom had seen monkeys only in biology textbooks and children's books. In any event, the facility was used as a prison.
"There's no way I can get used to the damned darkness. I have to use this trash,"
the old man lamented, covering his eyes.
"Well, why have you come here? Aren't there enough places on that side or something?"
"Listen," Artyom didn't allow him to finish speaking. "You are free. You can let us out before these cannibals return. You are a normal man."
"Of course I can,"
he answered.
"But of course, I will not. We make no deals with the enemies of the Great Worm."
"What the hell is the Great Worm? And what are you talking about? I've never even heard of it, so I can't be its enemy."
"It's not important whether you have heard of him or not. You came from that side, from where his enemies live, and that means you must be spies."
The derisive rasping in the old man's voice had changed to a steely clacking.
"You have firearms and flashlights, damned mechanical toys, machines for killing. What more evidence do you need to understand that you are the infidels, that you are the enemies of life, the enemies of the Great Worm?"
He jumped up from his chair and approached the bars.
"It is you and those who like you are guilty of everything."
The old man put out the overheated lighter, and in the encroaching darkness, he was heard blowing on his burning fingers. Then a new voice called out. This one hissed and chilled the blood. Artyom grew frightened. He remembered Tretiak killed by a poisoned needle.
"Please,"
he began to whisper fervently.
"Before it's not too late, why are you doing this?"
The old man said nothing, and a minute later the place was filled with sounds. Slaps of unshod feet on concrete, hoarse breathing, the whistling of air drawn through nostrils. Although Artyom didn't see any of those entering, he felt that all of them were studying him closely, looking, sniffing, listening to how loudly Artyom's heart beat in his chest.
"The fire people. He smells like smoke. He smells like fear. One is the smell of the station from that side, the other is foreign. One the other. They are enemies,"
someone hissed at last.
"Let Vartan do it,"
another voice ordered.
"Light the fire,"
someone commanded. The lighter was struck once more. In the room besides the old man, in whose hand the flame fluttered, stood three shaved savages, shading their eyes with their hands. Artyom already had seen one of them, the thick-set and bearded one. The other also seemed strangely familiar to him. Looking Artyom directly in the eyes, he took a step forward and stopped at the bars. The smell from him wasn't like from the rest. Artyom detected a faint stench of decomposed flesh emanating from this man. They couldn't stop staring at him. Artyom winced. He understood where he had seen this face earlier. It was the creature who had attacked him in the night at Kievskaya. A strange feeling seized Artyom. It was similar to the paralysis, only this time his mind was affected. His thoughts stood still, and he obediently opened his consciousness to the silent probing.
"Through a hatch.
The hatch had remained open. They had come for the boy, for Anton's son. They stole him in the night. I am guilty of it all. I allowed him to listen to your music, through the pipe. I climbed into the handcar. We didn't tell anyone else. We arrived together. We didn't close it.
Artyom answered the questions that arose in his head. It was impossible to resist or conceal anything from the soundless voice demanding the answers from him. Artyom's interrogator knew in a minute everything that was of interest. He nodded and stepped back. The fire was extinguished. Slowly, like feeling returning to a numbed hand, Artyom regained control.
Vovan, Kulak, return to the tunnel, to the passage. Close the door,
one of the voices ordered. Most likely it belonged to the bearded commander.
The enemies are to remain here. Drone will guard the enemies. There is a holiday tomorrow. The people will eat the enemies. They will honor the great worm.
What have you done with Oleg? What have you done with the child?
Artyom began wheezing after them. The door thudded hollowly. Chapter 17. The Children of the Worm. Several minutes passed in total darkness, and Artyom, having decided that they had left them alone, began to pull himself up, trying at least to sit. His tightly tied legs and hands were numb and sore. Artyom recalled the words of his stepfather explaining to him once that even leaving a bandage or tourniquet on too long could kill the skin, although it seemed to him that it didn't matter now.
"Enemy, lay quietly,"
a voice rang out.
"Drone will spit a paralyzing needle."
"It's not necessary," Artyom froze obediently. "You don't have to shoot."
He had a glimmer of hope. Perhaps he could convince his jailer to help him get out. But how can you talk to a savage who barely understands you?
"And who is this great worm?"
he asked the first thing that came to his head.
"The great worm makes the earth. He makes the world, he makes man. The great worm is everything. The great worm is life. The enemies of the great worm, the people of the machines, are death."
"I have never heard of him,"
Artyom said, choosing his words carefully.
"Where does he live?"
"The great worm lives here, next to us, around us. The great worm digs all the passages. Then man said he does it. No, the great worm, he gives life. He takes life. He digs new passages. The people live in them. Good people honor the great worm. Enemies of the great worm want to kill him. That is what say the priests."
"Who are those priests?"
"Old people with hair on their head. Only they can. They know. They listen to the desires of the great worm and they tell the people. Good people do it thus. Bad people do not obey. Bad people are enemies. The good eat them."
Recalling the overheard conversation, Artyom began gradually to comprehend what was what. The old man relating the legend of the worm was probably one of those priests.
"The priest says it is forbidden to eat people. He says the great worm will cry when one man eats another,"
Artyom reminded him, trying to express his thoughts exactly as the savage would.
"It is against the will of the great worm to eat people. If we stay here, they will eat us. The great worm will be sad. He will cry,"
he added carefully.
"Of course the great worm will cry,"
a derisive voice was heard from the darkness.
"But emotions are emotions, and you will not replace a protein food in a ration with anything."
It was the same old man speaking. Artyom recognized his timbre and intonation. Only he didn't know if he had been in the room all the time or had just stolen in unnoticed. It didn't matter. He wasn't going to get out of the cell now. Then another thought entered Artyom's head and it chilled him.
How lucky that Anton had not come round yet and wasn't hearing this.
And the child? The children that you steal? Do you eat them too? The boy?
Oleg? He asked almost soundlessly, staring into the darkness with eyes open wide from fear.
We do not eat little ones,
the savage replied, although Artyom thought the old man was answering.
Little ones cannot be evil. They cannot be enemies. We take little ones in order to explain how to live. We talk about the great worm. We teach them to honor him. Good boy, Dron,
the priest said.
Favorite student,
he explained.
What happened to the boy you stole last night? Where is he? It was your monster who dragged him away, I know,
Artyom said.
Monster? And just who brought forth these monsters?
The old man exploded.
Who brought forth these mute, three-eyed, armless, six-fingered things who die during birth and are unable to reproduce? Who deprived them of human appearance, promised them paradise, and flung them to die in the blind gut of this cursed city? Who is to blame for this, and who is the real monster?
Artyom was silent. The old man said no more and only breathed heavily, trying to calm down. And Anton finally came too.
Where is he?
He said in a hoarse voice.
Where is my son? Where is my son? Give me my son!
He began to scream, and trying to get free, began to roll about the floor, hitting the bars of the cage, then the wall.
Violent!
The old man remarked in his former derisive tone.
Dron, calm him.
A strange sound was heard, as if someone had coughed. Something whistled through the air, and Anton was calm again after several seconds.
Very instructive,
the priest said.
I will go and bring the boy. Let him see his papa and say goodbye. A good laddie, by the way. His pop can be proud of him. He resists hypnosis so well.
He began to shuffle along the floor, and then the door creaked.
No need to fear,
the jailer softly said unexpectedly.
Good people do not kill. They do not eat the children of enemies. Little ones do not sin. It is possible to learn to live well. The great worm forgives young enemies.
My God, just what is this great worm? This is completely absurd. Worse than non-believers and Satanists. How can you believe in him? Has anyone ever seen him, your worm? Have you seen him or something?
Artyom tried for sarcasm, but lying on the floor with his arms and legs tied didn't make it easy. Just as when he had been waiting in prison to be hanged, he became indifferent to his own fate. He put his head on the cold floor and closed his eyes, expecting an answer.
It is forbidden to look at the great worm. Banned,
the savage snapped.
And such a thing cannot be, Artyom replied reluctantly. There is no worm, and people made the tunnels. They all are shown on maps. There is even a round one where Hansa is, and only people can build round ones. I don't suppose you even know what a map is.
I know,
Dron said quietly.
I study with the priest. He shows us. There are not many passages on the map. The great worm has been making new passages, and they aren't on the map. Even here, our home, there are new passages, sacred ones. And they are not on the map. The people of the machines make the maps. They think they dig the passages. Stupid. Proud. They don't know anything. The great worm punishes them for this.
Why does he punish them?
Artyom didn't understand.
For arrogance,
the savage articulated carefully.
For arrogance,
confirmed the voice of the priest.
The great worm made man last, and man was his favorite offspring, for he did not give intellect to the others, but gave it to man. He knew that intellect is a dangerous toy, and therefore he ordered, live in the world with yourself, in the world with the earth, in the world with life and all creatures, and honor me. After this, the great worm went to the very bowels of the earth, but said beforehand, the day will come and I shall return. Behave as if I were with you. and the people obeyed their creator and lived in the world with the earth he had created, and in the world with each other, and in the world with the other creatures, and they honored the great worm, and they bore children, and their children bore children, and from father to son, from mother to daughter, they handed down the words of the great worm. But those who had heard his order with their own ears died, and their children died, and many generations were replaced, and the great worm has not yet returned. And then, one after the other, people stopped observing his covenants and did as they wanted, and there appeared those who said, "There never was a great worm! And there is not now!" And others expected that the great worm would return and punish them. He would burn them with the light of his eyes, devour their bodies, and cause the passages where they live to crumble. But the great worm has not returned, and has only cried for the people, and his tears have risen up from the depths and flooded the lower passages. But those who have turned from their creator have said, "No one created us, we always have been. Man is beautiful and mighty. He cannot have been created by an earthworm." Then they said, "All the earth is ours, and was ours, and will be. And the great worm did not make the passages in it, but we and our ancestors." And they lit the fire and began to kill the creations which the great worm had created, saying, "Here all the life that is around is ours, and everything here is only to satisfy our hunger." And they created machines in order to kill more quickly, in order to sow death, in order to destroy the life created by the great worm, and to subdue his world. But even then he did not rise up from the extreme depths to which he had gone. And they laughed, and began to do more against that of which he had spoken, and they decided, in order to degrade him, to build such machines that would replicate his likeness. And they created such machines, and they went inward in them, and they laughed. "Here," they said, "now we ourselves can rule as the great worm, and not as one, but as dozens. And the light strikes from our eyes, and the thunder rolls when we are creeping, and people leave their womb. We created the worm, and not the worm us." But even this was not enough for them. The hatred grew in their heart, and they decided to destroy the very earth where they lived, and they created thousands of different machines that belched flame and spat iron and rendered the earth into parts. And they began to destroy the earth and every living thing that was in it. And then the great worm could not bear it, and he condemned them. He took from them their most valuable gift, intellect. Insanity overtook them. They turned their machines against each other and began to kill each other, and they no longer remembered why they did it and what they were doing, but they were unable to stop. Thus did the great worm punish man for his arrogance.
"But not everyone?"
a child's voice asked.
"No. There were those who always remembered the great worm and honored him. They renounced the machines and light and lived in the world with the earth. They were saved, and the great worm did not forget their loyalty, and he preserved their intellect, and he promised to give them the whole world when his enemies have fallen, and so shall it be."
"And it will be so,"
the savage and child repeated together.
"Oleg!"
Artyom called out, hearing something familiar in the child's voice. The child did not reply.
"And to this day the enemies of the great worm live in the passages burrowed by them, because there is nowhere else for them to take shelter. But they continue to worship, not him, but their machines. The patience of the great worm is enormous, and it has been sufficient for long centuries of human outrages. But even it is not eternal. It has been foretold that when he makes the last strike at the dark heart of the country of his enemies, their will shall be crushed and the world will fall to the good people. It has been foretold that the hour shall come and the great worm will summon the rivers and the earth and the air for aid, and the earthly layer will sink and the seething currents will rush, and the dark heart of the enemy will rush to oblivion. And then finally, the just will triumph, and there will be happiness for the good, and life without diseases, and fungi for one's heart's content, and every kind of beast in abundance.
A flame was lit. Artyom had succeeded in leaning his back against the wall, and now he no longer had to bend agonizingly in order to keep the people on the other side of the bars in his field of view. A small boy sat cross-legged on the floor in the middle of the room with his back to him. Over him loomed the withered figure of the priest, lit by the flame of the burning lighter in his hand. The savage with the blowpipe in his hand stood alongside, leaning against the door jamb. All eyes were fixed on the old man who had just finished his narrative. Artyom turned his head with difficulty and looked at Anton, who was fixed in that convulsive pose in which the paralyzing needle had caught him. He stared at the ceiling and was not able to see his son, but he certainly heard everything.
"Stand up, sonny, and look at these people," said the priest.
The boy immediately got to his feet and turned towards Artyom. It was Oleg.
"Go closer to him. Do you recognize any of them?"
the old man asked.
"Yes,"
the boy nodded affirmatively, looking sullenly at Artyom.
"It is my pup, and I was listening to your songs with this one, through the pipe."
"Your pup and his friend are bad people. They have been using machines and have been disparaging the great worm. Do you remember you told me and Uncle Vartan what your papa did when the bad people decided to destroy the world?"
"Yes,"
again Oleg nodded.
"So tell us again."
The old man placed the lighter into his other hand.
"My pop worked in the RVA, the rocket forces. He was a missile man. I wanted to be just like him too when I grow up."
Artyom's throat dried up. How had he not been able to work out this riddle earlier? So that's where the lad had got that strange tab and so had declared that he was a missile man, just like the slain Tretiak. The coincidence was almost incredible. There remained in the whole metro people who had served in the rocket forces, and two of them had ended up in Kievskaya. Could this have been by chance?
"As a missile man, these people created greater evil for the world than all the rest put together. They sent machines and equipment that burned and destroyed the earth, and almost all life on it. The great worm forgives many who stray, but not those who gave the orders to destroy the world and sow death in it, and not those who carried it out. Your father has caused intolerable pain to the great worm. Your father destroyed our world with his own hands. Do you know what he deserves?"
The old man's voice had become stern.
"Death?"
the boy asked uncertainly, while glancing first at the priest and then at his father, doubled up on the floor of the monkey cage.
"Death,"
the priest confirmed.
"He must die. The sooner the evil people who have imparted pain to the great worm die, the sooner his promise will be fulfilled, and the world will be reborn and delivered to the good people."
"Then Papa must die,"
concurred Oleg.
"That's the boy."
The old man tenderly patted the boy on the head.
"And now run Play with Uncle Vartan and the kiddies again. Only look out, be careful in the darkness, don't fall. Dron, lead him, and I'll sit some more for a while with them. Return in half an hour with the others and grab the sacks. We'll be ready.
The light was extinguished. The swift, rustling steps of the savage and the light tread of the child faded into the distance. The priest gave a cough and said to Artyom,
I'll have a little chat here with you if you aren't opposed to it. We usually don't take captives unless they are children, and then they are all puny and born sickly. But we are seeing more and more adults who are deaf. I would be glad to talk with them, and maybe they would not mind. Only, well, they eat them too quickly.
Why then do you teach them that it is bad to eat people?
Artyom asked.
The worm will cry there, and so on. Well, how can I put it? It is for them in the future. For you, of course, you will miss this moment, and even me too, but now the basis of a future civilization is being laid down, of a culture which will live with nature in the world. Cannibalism is a necessary evil for them. There is nothing without animal protein, you see. But the legends will remain. And when the direct need to kill and stuff your face with those like you fades away, they will stop doing it. Only then will the great worm remember. It is unfortunate only to be living in this dandy time.
The old man began to laugh unpleasantly.
You know, I've already seen so many things in the metro,
Artyom said.
At one station they believe that if you dig deeply enough, you can dig all the way to hell. At another, that we already are living on the threshold of paradise, because the final battle of good and evil is over, and those who survived were chosen for entry into the heavenly kingdom. After that, the story about your worm doesn't sound all that convincing somehow. You at least believe in it yourself.
What's the difference what I or the other priests believe in?
The old man grinned.
You won't be alive much longer, just a few hours. So I'll just tell you something. One cannot be so frank with someone as with he who will carry all his revelations to the grave. So what I myself believe in is not important. The main thing is that the people believe. It is difficult to come to believe in a God whom I have created myself.
The priest stopped for a short while, thinking, and then continued.
How could I explain it to you? When I was a student, I studied philosophy and psychology at the university, although I doubt that's anything to you. And I had a professor, an instructor of cognitive psychology, a most knowledgeable man, who laid out the intellectual process systematically. He was a real pleasure to listen to. And then I put to him a question, as all others do at that age, does God exist? I had read various books, had conversations, as is customary, and I was inclined to the view that most likely he did not. And somehow I decided that this professor in particular, a great expert on the human soul, could answer for me precisely this question that so pained me. I went to see him in his office, on the pretext of discussing a paper, and then I asked, in your opinion, Ivan Mikhailich, does God actually exist? Then he really surprised me. For me, he said, this question isn't worth asking. I myself was from a family of believers, used to the idea that he exists. From the psychological point of view, I did not try to analyze the truth, because I did not want to. And generally, he said, for me it was not so much a question of knowledge based on principle as everyday behavior. My faith was not that I was sincerely convinced of the existence of a higher power, but that I was fulfilling the prescribed commandments, praying at night and going to church. I would be better for it, more at peace, and that's it.
The old man went silent. And what? Artyom couldn't contain himself.
Whether I believe in the great worm or not isn't so very important. But commandments from divine lips live for centuries. Just one more thing.
Create a god and teach his word, and believe me, the great worm is no worse than other gods and has survived many of them.
Artyom closed his eyes. Neither Dron nor the chief of this surprising tribe, nor even such strange creations as Vartan, had the slightest doubt that the great worm exists. For them it was a given, the only explanation of what they could see around them, the only authority for action and a measure of good and evil. What else could a man who had never seen anything except the Metro believe in? But there was in the legends of the worm something that Artyom was still unable to understand.
But why do you incite them so against the machines? What's so bad about these mechanisms? Electricity, lighting, firearms, and so on, your teachings mean that your people live without them, he said.
What's bad about machines?
The old man's tone changed dramatically. The good nature and patience with which he had just set forth his thoughts evaporated.
You intend an hour before your death to preach to me the benefits of machines? Well, look around. Only a blind man won't notice that if mankind owed some kind of a debt, that he wouldn't rely so much on machines. How dare you snicker about the important role of equipment here at my station, you nobody!
Artyom hadn't expected his question, way less seditious than the previous about his belief in the great worm, to provoke such a reaction from the old man. Not knowing how to respond, he remained silent. The priest's heavy breathing could be heard in the darkness, as he whispered some kind of curses and tried to calm himself. He resumed speaking only after several minutes.
I am out of the habit of speaking with non-believers.
Judging by the voice, the old man had regained control of himself.
I got carried away in speaking with you. Something is keeping the young ones. They aren't bringing the sacks.
He paused meaningfully.
What sex?
Artyom responded to the ploy.
They will prepare you. When I spoke of torture, I wasn't being strictly accurate. Pointless cruelty goes against the grain of the great worm. My colleagues and I, when we understood that cannibalism had taken root here, and we could no longer do anything about it, decided to look after the culinary side of the problem. And so someone recalled that the Koreans, when they eat dogs, catch them alive, put them in sacks, and beat them to death with sticks. The meat benefits a lot from it. It becomes soft, tender. One man's multiple hematomas, as it were, are another man's cutlet. So don't judge us too severely. I myself would perhaps be happier to die first and then suffer the sticks. Inevitably there will be internal bleeding. A recipe is a recipe.
The old man even clicked the lighter in order to get a look at the effect he had produced.
However, something is keeping them. It shouldn't have happened, he added.
A whistle interrupted him. Artyom heard cries, running, children's crying, and that ominous whistle again. Something had happened at the station. The priest listened to the noise uneasily, then extinguished the fire and grew silent. Several minutes later, heavy boots began to rumble on the threshold, and a low voice murmured,
"Is anyone alive?"
"Yes, we're here, Artyom and Anton!"
Artyom yelled at the top of his lungs, hoping that the old man had no pipes with poisoned needles hanging around his neck.
"Here they are! Cover me and the lad!"
someone screamed. There was a dazzling, bright flash of light. The old man dashed towards the exit, but a man barring the way hit him in the neck. The priest began to wheeze and fell.
"The door! Hold the door!"
Something had come crashing down. Plaster began to fall from the ceiling, and Artyom blinked. When he opened his eyes, two men were now standing in the room. They were not run-of-the-mill soldiers, and Artyom hadn't seen anyone like them before. Dressed in heavy, long bulletproof vests over tailored black uniforms, both were armed with unusual short machine guns with laser gun sights and silencers. In addition, massive titanium helmets with face guards, like the Hansa Spetsnaz, and large titanium shields with eye slits added to the impressive sight. A flamethrower was visible on the back of one. They quickly inspected the room, illuminating it with long and inconceivably strong flashlights that were shaped like cudgels.
"This?"
one of them asked.
"Them,"
the other confirmed. Efficiently examining the lock on the door of the monkey cage, the first moved back, took several steps, and leapt, striking the cage with his boots. The rusty hinges broke and the door collapsed half a foot from Artyom. The man lowered himself onto one knee in front of Artyom and lifted his face guard. Everything now fell into place. Melnik was looking at Artyom through squinted eyes. His wide, serrated knife slipped along the wires, entangling Artyom's legs and hands. Then the stalker cut the wire that had been binding Anton.
Alive, Melnik remarked with satisfaction. Can you walk?
Artyom began to nod, but was unable to lift himself to his feet. His numbed body was still not totally under his command. Several more men ran into the room. Two of them immediately took up a defensive position at the doors. There were 8 fighters in all in the party. They were dressed and equipped just like those who had stormed into the room, but several of them wore long leather cloaks as Hunter had. One of them lowered a child to the ground, covering him with the shield he wore on his arm. The child immediately raced into the cell and bent over Anton.
Papa, Papa, I lied to them so they'd think I was on their side. I showed them where you are. Forgive me, Papa. Papa, don't be silent.
The boy could hardly contain his tears. Anton looked at the ceiling with glassy eyes. Artyom was frightened that 2 paralyzing needles in a day could turn out to be too much for the watch commander. Melnik placed his index finger on Anton's neck.
He's okay, he concluded after several seconds. He's alive. Bring a stretcher.
While Artyom talked about the impact of the poisoned needles, 2 fighters unrolled a cloth stretcher on the floor and loaded Anton onto it. On the floor, the old man began to stir and mumble something.
And who's this?
Melnik asked, and having heard from Artyom the explanation, said,
We'll take him with us and use him as cover. How's the situation?
All quiet, reported a fighter guarding the entrance door.
Let's get back to the tunnel, the stalker said. We have to return to base with the wounded and the hostage for interrogation. Here you go.
He threw Artyom a machine gun.
If all goes as planned, you won't have to use it. You don't have any armor, so you'd better stay under our cover. Watch the youngster.
Artyom nodded and took Oleg by the hand, nearly tearing the boy away from the stretcher on which his father lay.
Let's build the turtle, Melnik ordered.
The fighters formed an oval in a movement, sticking out their linked shields above which only helmets were seen. 4 carried the stretcher with their free hands. The boy and Artyom were inside the formation, fully covered by shields. They gagged the old man, tied his hands behind his back, and placed him at the head of the formation. After several strong jabs, he stopped trying to break loose and calmed down, staring sullenly at the floor. The first 2 fighters, who had special night vision instruments, served as the eyes of the turtle. The instruments were fastened directly to the helmets, so that their hands remained free. The party bent down on command, covering their legs with the shields, and moved ahead swiftly. Squeezed between the fighters, Artyom held Oleg's hand tightly and pulled him along. He couldn't see anything, and could work out what was happening only by the curt discussions.
3 on the right, woman, a child.
On the left, in the arch, they're shooting.
Needles began to clang on the metal of the shield.
Take them out.
Machine gun pops were heard in response.
There's 1, 2, keep moving.
From behind, Lomov.
Some more shots.
Where, don't go there.
I said, hold the hostage.
Damn, it flew right in front of my eyes.
Stop, halt.
What's there? It's all blocked. There are about 40 people there, barricades. Is it far? 20 meters, they're not firing. They're approaching from the sides. When did they manage to build barricades?
A rain of needles fell on the shields. On signal, they all got down onto 1 knee, so that now the armor covered them completely. Artyom bent down, covering the boy. They placed the stretcher with Anton on the floor. The rain of needles intensified.
Do not respond, we'll wait.
It hit my boot!
Ready the light! On the count of 3, flashlights and fire! Whoever has the night vision equipment, choose the targets now! 1, how'd they shoot? 2, 3!
Several powerful flashlights lit up simultaneously, and the machine guns opened up. Somewhere ahead, Artyom could hear the cries and moans of the dying. Then the firing unexpectedly ceased. Artyom listened.
Over there, with the white flag. Are they giving up or what? Cease fire.
We'll talk. Put the hostage in front.
Stop, you bastard there. I've got him. Smart old man.
We have your priest. Let us leave.
Melnik called out.
Let us return to the tunnel. I repeat, let us leave.
Well, what's there? 0 reaction, they're silent. Maybe they don't understand us. So hold the light on him for me a little better.
Take a look.
Then the negotiation suddenly stopped. It was as though the fighters were absorbed in thought. At first it was just those who were at the front, then the ones covering the rear quieted down. The silence was tense, not good.
What's there? Artyom asked uneasily. No one answered him. The people even stopped moving about. Artyom felt the palm of the hand he was holding the boy with start to sweat.